We all know divorce can take an emotional and financial toll. But what happens when couples want to split but can't afford to? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the cost of divorce and when couples stay together out of financial necessity are Brown Carrington partner, Mark Ogle. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you.
And personal finance reporter for the Wall Street Journal, Veronica Dagger. Thanks for being here, Veronica.
Thanks for having me.
Full disclosure, my daughters went to elementary school with Mark's daughters. So it's been a while, but it's good to see you again.
Yeah, thank you. It is. It has been a while.
Yeah. Mark, a lot of us have this idea of divorce as high-stakes fights with lawyers battling over assets, but a lot of divorces are mutual decisions between people who don't have a lot of money or things to split up. What's at stake for couples who want to divorce but are really financially burdened?
Well, you're right, Lucy. There are a lot of people that show up that want divorced and have financial issues most of the time. Makes it very difficult for them to actually afford an attorney, much less two, to carry out the battle. So, but there are ways. There are methods by which you can divorce that aren't so costly. Collaborative divorce, for instance, where the parties work together for one goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there some couples who kind of forge ahead without an attorney at all?
That does happen. I think that happens more now than ever before. And it's frustrating a little bit for the court system because it's a little difficult to navigate through the court system without an attorney involved. But online now with AI and everything else that exists, there are a lot of couples that are trying that.
Okay. Veronica, are there times where couples might feel almost trapped in a marriage because they just can't afford to get a divorce?
For sure. And especially now because of the housing market. As we all know, the price of houses have just gone through the roof. And if you were married and you bought your house 10 years ago and you have a low mortgage rate, and then all of a sudden now you want to get a divorce, one of you most likely is going to want to move out of that house, and how to find another house at these now higher prices, at the higher mortgage rates, that's a major financial burden on the person moving and in the couple in general, because they have to split this pot of assets. And so it makes it very difficult for people to move on because they feel so anchored, even more anchored to houses than they did in the past. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing some people actually deciding to keep the house and get divorced, but live there together almost as roommates because of the high cost of things today.
Wow. Mark, have you seen that in your practice?
I actually have. That was a very good point. You know, divorce doesn't create more money, but it takes the same amount of money. It makes people use it in two separate homes, right? So Veronica was absolutely correct. It is very difficult now with the interest rates. Selling a home and trying to buy another one is, you know, the couples are struggling with that.
Even rent is so high.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. One of the other things I've seen, which is kind of neat, we had a story about this. One of my coworkers, Dalvin Brown, wrote this a while ago. Couples doing this thing called nesting, where you keep the family home and the kids stay in place, but the parents are the ones who rotate out week to week. So one parent or the couple buys or rents an apartment somewhere else, they keep the house. And 1 week, one parent lives in the house. The next week, the other parent comes back into the house where the other parent goes to the apartment. And so it gives the kids a sense of stability. They're able to stay in the same school district. You're keeping this high value asset. Of course, you have the expense of renting an apartment elsewhere. But this is also a growing trend we're seeing among some folks.
It seems like, Mark, that could definitely be less disruptive for children, but you'd have to have a pretty good relationship with your ex to make that work, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. That's the point I was going to make. I don't know if you saw my hand up over here. I really it does require a tremendous amount of cooperation between the parents to make that bird nesting type situation work, because a lot of trust that usually doesn't exist when parties get divorced. So when you're coming in and out of the house, you're leaving your stuff there when you're gone. Is your spouse going through it? Are they looking at it? Are they it does cause some turmoil. And my experience has been, I've had some of those situations and they haven't lasted forever.
Yeah. You know? It's kind of what seems like a good idea, but it's tough for the couple to maintain
sometimes.
Yes,
that's exactly what happens.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about the cost of divorce and what happens when couples can't afford to split. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Mark, how expensive can divorce be for couples?
Well, that's a very loaded question, right? And I get that question a lot when I'm doing my consultations or first interview with parties. How much is this going to cost? And the answer is always the same to me. It depends on you. A lot of it depends on the parties, the emotional baggage that they're bringing to it, and how long are they going to play that emotional baggage out in the divorce itself, right? Sometimes it's not the attorney's fees and the cost of the divorce that actually, or the cost of the attorney or the experts that causes the cost to be so high. It's the emotional fight. They will fight over a $10,000, they'll spend $20,000 over a $10,000 asset.
Wow. And what do you mean spend $20,000, like just in terms of hourly fees?
Yes. Kind
of? Yeah.
Yes. Just in terms of hourly fees on the lawyers. I mean, it's all emotional. It's mostly an emotional issue. Parties that are able to put the emotions aside and treat this as a business decision when they're going through. And it's almost impossible to do because there's so much connection, right? But if they're able to do that, they can really cut the cost of their divorce down quite a bit. Divorces cost more nowadays too because electronics, we're walking around with evidence in our pockets all day long with our cell phones and stuff and all that's coming out. So it used to be evidence showed up at my office in a banker's box, right? And now it's all electronic and it's everywhere. So if we're having a fight over custody or something like that, the cost to track that down and get all that evidence is expensive. Right?
And the evidence being kind of where your partner's been, what they've been doing, that kind of thing.
That's right. With dating apps and everything else, you would be surprised what people put on Facebook and what they put on Instagram and all that stuff, right?
Wow.
Well, we saw people...
Go ahead, Veronica.
I was going to say, we saw people fighting over such trivial things like a spice rack, different spices, the leg lamp from that movie, A Christmas Story, people spending like tens of thousands of dollars on things that were worth pennies. But it was because of this emotional connection, as Mark said, these items that are so trivial sounding, they sound trivial to us, but they mean a lot to the couple or at least one member of the couple, sometimes because it's more of a symbol of the life they thought they had and they no longer have, their grief, their anger, resentment. And then sometimes people will spend an exorbitant amount of money just to give it to their ex spouse. They just want to give their ex-spouse a hard time and they just want to win and have that person lose. And so we've seen people in this series that we did for Divorce Week for WSJ, some people spending $100,000 just to make their spouse's, their ex's life hell, essentially.
Wow. Well, Veronica, is there ever a time where separation's a more viable option for people to kind of live separate lives without actually getting divorced? Did you hear about that from anybody? What can that kind of thing look like?
Yeah, for sure. And it's ironic. So, we're talking about, some of the elements of the economy right now, making people stay together. But this idea of staying together, even though, or separating, but not fully divorcing, is something super wealthy people have done for years. Like the extreme, she stays in the house in the Hamptons and he stays in the apartment in Manhattan, and they stay like that for years and move on romantically. They just keep going on with their lives, even though they never divorce because it's too expensive even for them to divorce. When you think about the division of assets, but obviously not everyone's in this situation where we're seeing people separate and just go on with their lives, live like it's almost a business arrangement. Now, I think that can be somewhat confusing for kids who are involved, but also there's practical reasons for staying together in this way. For example, if someone has a health issue and they need to stay on the health insurance of their spouse, then maybe the merciful thing is to stay together in the eyes of the law, so that person can be on your health insurance. Or, you know, there's various reasons people may want to do it. But yes, of course, it's going to be still a little bit messy.
Yeah, I might add to that too, Veronica. I've seen this recently with older couples, what I'm going to call gray divorces, right? Mm-hmm. They've got their estate plans in order, their families are raised, their grandkids are, and rather than rip that apart, they simply decide to separate. They stay married and they live out their lives separate, but it does not affect then the estate planning that they had done and the transfer of their wealth to their children down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, what about, Veronica just mentioned healthcare, but there are other financial advantages to being married sometimes rather, I'm thinking about taxes and healthcare, like Veronica said. Do those things ever come into play for folks when they're deciding, do we separate and stay married or do we get divorced?
I think healthcare is one of the major issues people do think about. Not so much the tax benefits or the breaks that they get by being married. By that time, they're emotionally gone. And I don't think they really care if they save a little bit of money on filing a joint tax return. So I don't see that as often, but I do see issues where health insurance is a big problem. And sometimes parties will stay together a lot longer. Sometimes we'll delay the divorce decree being entered, even though we've reached an agreement on everything, to allow the parties to continue with a treatment or some sort of surgery that maybe is scheduled, and then get divorced after that. All right.
Wow.
They've done that. I've seen that happen many times.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we are going to continue this conversation after a short break. And later in the program, could the higher cost of virgin plastic be good for the recycled plastic market? This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our discussion about the cost of divorce and what happens when couples want to split but can't afford it. My guests are Brown Carrington partner Mark Ogle and personal finance reporter for The Wall Street Journal, Veronica Dagger. Excuse me, you can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Veronica, if you are going to get a divorce, when is it a good idea to get a divorce financial advisor?
So to get someone to look at your finances, I would say right away, before you even file, you want to talk to a financial advisor. Now, that's tricky if you and your spouse probably have the same financial advisor, but to do some sort of consultation, perhaps with a different advisor, so you can get a broader view about what your life might look like after you get a divorce. That's helpful, because I know you had mentioned taxes before. And one of the things that really shocks people often is what a penalty single people pay when it comes to the tax code. You know, you could be hit with a much higher tax bill once you become single, because you lose a lot of advantages. And so to talk to a financial advisor before that happens would be helpful, so you can be prepared. But to find someone, if you don't have a good idea of what your spouse makes or where your assets are, that's something you want to try to get on top of as soon as possible, just because there is circumstances where spouses, when they're divorcing, try to hide assets. So if you can make sure there's somebody in your corner helping you track things down and make sure there's nothing that's going to get slip by you, that's helpful.
Yeah. Mark, I know there are some financial advisors who specialize in divorce cases and advising people who are getting divorced. Do you see that a lot in your practice? I guess I'm wondering, do you ever work alongside one of these specialty financial advisors to help collaborate for clients?
Yes. And I agree with Veronica, the sooner the better that you can get a independent financial advisor involved, the better it is for you. It eliminates a little bit of the anxiety of not knowing what's going to be on the other side. And a lot of times, and I think Veronica hit on this a little bit, one spouse or the other is disadvantaged financially in the family situation, right? They structured it that way. One party goes to work, one party stays home, they may take care of the kids, may not even have any idea how much the retirement account has in it, what any bank accounts or savings might be. And they're totally shocked when they actually find that out. And have never really managed money before sometimes. And so it's very helpful to your family law attorney for you to have an independent financial advisor helping you. And it does help with tracking down assets and all the other things that you need. So I very much like having a financial advisor involved.
Yeah. Does it mean sometimes clients need to kick in more for their 401k after divorce, for example, because they're not going to have that spousal retirement plan to kind of help in the long term?
Yeah. So what we find out a lot of times is the lower earner spouse yeah. cannot replace the money that's in that 401k as fast, right? The higher wage earner can certainly, and a lot of times in part of the negotiations, some of the discussion will be to disproportionately divide the retirement accounts so that the spouse with the less earning capacity may actually have enough money at some point to be able to retire. The one with the higher earning capacity will replenish their 401k as we go along. Mm-hmm. So those are things that take place in negotiations.
Yeah.
It's really important to get clear on your numbers, though, ahead of time, as you both are alluding to, just because you might be in a situation where you're really fighting for the house and the divorce. You're saying, I want to keep this house. But if you don't know very clearly how much it costs to maintain that house, whether it's, you know, the home insurance or the property taxes or everything related, the HOAs, everything related to that house, you might really get shocked when that house becomes yours. And if you're not making enough money to support that, being able to keep that house is going to be very difficult for you. So in some cases, fighting for the house isn't always worth it for people. And that's something you need to talk to your advisor and your lawyer, all of those, have those conversations in advance. So, and pull all those numbers in advance. So you're not in a situation where, yeah, you get the house, but then a year later, you have to sell it because it's just not feasible for you to keep it.
Yeah. Mark, you were talking about the lower wage earner versus the higher wage earner in divorce. I would imagine that very often for heterosexual couples, the man is the higher earner and the woman is not earning as much, not always, but often.
Yeah.
Do women get an advantage in many divorces when they're fighting for custody of children, maybe, but then they also have the costs that come with being the primary parent or having sole custody of the children?
Right. Well, that's a good question, actually, because 25 years ago, I think that was the case, right? And I think women were primarily the custodians of children. That has all changed. Hmm. In fact, in Kentucky, we have a statute now that presumes that joint custody is in the best interest of the child, as well as an equal parenting schedule. So moms and dads are now parenting equally. Now, sometimes they do that to a fault. So 50-50 parenting isn't always what's best. I think if you put the children's interests first, a lot of times you can get as close to 50-50. You can still have adequate time with your children, but the children's lives could be better if it's not straight up 50-50.
It's not right? The constant shuttling back and forth.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And the cost of raising a child is, you know, you would think you're splitting the cost of raising, but many, many times you're duplicating the same cost in each home. So it's costing twice as much to raise those children as it did when you were together.
Hmm.
Right.
So. Wow. Mark, can mediation be a less expensive way to approach divorce? You talked about collaborative law, but what about mediation?
Yes. Now, I am a mediator as well, and I do a significant amount of mediation. Mediation is a good way to eliminate, of course, a trial on the issue. And trials are so expensive. There's so much time spent outside the courtroom preparing for it to get your evidence into the record that you don't necessarily have to do for mediation. However, the best mediators and the best lawyers preparing for mediation are prepared as if they're going to trial. They have all the numbers. They've provided that information. They do the work ahead of time, but it still is much more cost efficient to mediate a case with all that information than it would be to try that case to a judge.
Hmm. Veronica, I know you and your colleagues at the Wall Street Journal interviewed a lot of people who got divorced as part of your Cost of Divorce series. How did that change the way you think about divorce?
It really did. I'd been a party to, I'm not divorced myself, but I had been, you know, a witness or with my cousin when she got divorced. I was somewhat familiar with divorce and how contentious it could be and how nasty people can get. And one of the things it struck me about reporting this series was that in certain cases, it's not always a war of the roses, so to speak. Some people end up friends. They end up joking about what they fought over in the past years later. And they're able to have a relationship where they still have some holidays together. That to me shocked me because all of my friends and family who have been divorced, that hasn't been the case at all. Another thing that really shocked me too was the level of, dare I say, pettiness of the small objects that people fought over, whether it was, you know, like I said, the spices or some other thing that didn't really have big financial value. That surprised me, but that was very symbolic of their feelings of loss and anger. And on the flip side of people joking about divorce years later, one thing that also surprised me is that time didn't heal all wounds. We spoke to spouses decades later, and many of them felt very bitter about what happened. And even though they had moved on and maybe remarried and had a family with their new spouse, they still remember the slights and the insult and the hurt. And so that not everyone ends up better because of it. Not everyone ends up happier and freer because of that, but some people do. So it's such a personal thing. It's such a case-by-case basis, depending on so many things, including the finances of the people involved.
Yeah. I will say I haven't been divorced either, but my parents were, and they did a great job with the civility piece of it and friendship and spending holidays together. So I was lucky to have that example. Mark, you're a divorce lawyer. I know you've also been divorced yourself.
That's correct.
How do you advise your clients to really think about the decision to get a divorce and the whole process itself? Do you ever have people who come to you and they think, we're going this direction, we're not sure? What kind of advice do you give them?
I have that a lot, actually. And I believe I've probably talked a few people out of divorce.
Good for business, Mark.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not good for business. But they've come to me with issues that I think are not significant enough to warrant ripping a family apart. And I recommend them to therapy. A lot of times they will go get help. I love it when my clients are working on their own mental and emotional health when they're working with me. I don't want to be that guy, right? I don't want to be their therapist. I want to be their lawyer. And it's helpful when they go do that on their own. Sometimes they can work through the issues that have got them there to start with. Now, I think, Veronica, some of the stuff that you hit on was very accurate. And I think about people who hold grudges for long periods of time. A lot of that happens as a result of how that divorce came about. Hmm. What caused that divorce? Was there another affair? Was there financial misuse or something? Drugs, alcohol, whatever it might be, right?
Yeah. So you were talking about this earlier, Mark, that some couples are trying to navigate their way through a divorce without a lawyer, either using the internet, maybe finding documents online or using AI. What are the downsides of that?
Well, the downsides of that are missing something, right? Missing the assets that you might be entitled to, not knowing what the law would give you or potentially how it could protect you if you're the lower wage earner, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted to say about the cost of divorce that I didn't mention earlier that I wanted to, it does sometimes depend upon the attorneys. If you have attorneys that work together on a more regular basis, they know each other, they trust each other, the divorce can be smoother. And it usually will. Hmm. Now, if you have attorneys that don't know each other the cost can go astronomical. You're fighting over discovery. You're fighting over everything. And so choose your attorney wisely.
Sounds like good advice.
Yeah.
One more question for you, Veronica. There seems to be a trend that younger couples are thinking about prenups, even if they're not wealthy. Is that becoming more common? Is that a smart idea? What are you seeing on that front?
It is. Yes. We're seeing that become more common. And people, I suppose, maybe learned from the mistakes of their parents potentially and say, you know, even though we don't have millions to fight over, but let's put this in place just in case something happens and being clear-eyed about it, not worried you're going to offend the person so much as maybe that was the case a couple of years ago. I think it's more in the mainstream, and perhaps social media has something to do with it. We're hearing more of startups that have these businesses that where you can go online and create a prenup for a lower price. And so that's becoming more of a thing, and perhaps that's a good thing in the long run.
Yeah. Mark is nodding his head.
Yes, I've done, it's like an avalanche of prenups for young people. I just finished one last week. The young lady was 22 years old, you know, just had graduated from college.
Yeah.
Had a little bit of assets from inheritance and things of those nature, of that nature. But there are a lot of people, and it's a great conversation to have before you're married. You're going in with your eyes wide open, right? Yep. And you're communicating about difficult things, spousal support, things like you can't talk about child custody or child support in a prenup, but you can talk about spousal support. You can talk about incomes, and it's a good thing to do before you get married. Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, this has been fascinating. I've been talking with Brown Carrington partner Mark Ogle and personal finance reporter for the Wall Street Journal, Veronica Dagger. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, could the higher cost of virgin plastic be good news for the recycled plastic market? This is Cincinnati Edition.